Jesus, compassionate miracle worker. I would first like to show you all a map of Galilee, because that's where the action takes place today. Here's a picture of Galilee taken from the southeast corner. It's very close to the present day border with Jordan. I don't know how much you could read, but I'm going to explain some of the places that figure in today's stories. First, I want to say that in 2006, Ann and I were privileged to be with some friends. Some of you know Richard and Joe Peters. We drove around the lake, and over here on the east side, we stopped for a picnic. It was a hot day right before Easter in 2006. And we spread our food out on a picnic table there, and we could see the whole lake. It's about 15 miles top to bottom and about 9 miles at the widest point. It looked very small to see it all in one shot. There was no storm, no clouds, but there it was. But a lot happened here in the Bible, as we know. The story today in Matthew 14 begins over here on the west side, Tiberias. This is a city not mentioned in the Bible, but it's the place where Herod Antipas lived. He's the Herod that Jesus called the fox one time. And he's got John the Baptist in prison. And during this chapter 14 of Matthew, Herod will murder John the Baptist because of an oath made to his daughter. At that time, Jesus and the disciples were up in Capernaum, up in the north here. And the next stop is going to be Bethsaida over here toward the east. And that's the place where the 5,000 people were fed. And this whole area in the north here is very mountainous. There's mountain peaks up to 4,000, not peaks, but mountain ridges up to 4,000 feet high. The surface of the lake itself is 700 feet below sea level. So it's quite rugged territory. I mentioned Capernaum here, and then we're going to end up at Gennesaret over here on the west side. The disciples and Jesus will go north after this up to Tyre and Sidon, about 25, 30 miles north. And at some point, Jesus will take his disciples up to Caesarea Philippi, a town north of the Sea of Galilee, again, about 25 miles. So that's the map. Let me just check with my spotter, Diane. Is my voice loud enough? Thank you. And now I believe this morning that Simon Peter, would like to share some thoughts with us from heaven. He's titled his talk, Three Things I Learned from Jesus During Two Remarkable Days on Earth. Hello, this is Simon Peter here to speak with you this morning. One of the neat things about heaven is that we can perfectly understand and speak any language. And I want to say at the outset, I say thank you to Doug for good thoughts. Life is a miracle, as I experienced many times, and you probably have too. And unless God sustains us, we don't make it, we die. But God does sustain us, and we all say thank you for that. So I've heard that you all have been having a fairly tough time this past 12 months with the pandemic. Lots of uncertainty and challenges in your daily lives. Some of you have had close relatives pass away this past year. Some of you are dealing with very difficult family situations. And some of you have long-standing difficult health issues. And your church family, I know, has had to make many major adjustments during these past 12 months. And even Jesus himself can seem distant and uncaring. Well, I'd like to tell you this morning about three things I learned from Jesus during two remarkable days I spent with him when I was on earth. They're about how I came to understand deep down that Jesus is powerful and loving and compassionate, but also that he is willing to accept suffering. The first day on earth I'm thinking of was actually a very long day. It lasted a whole day, all night, and the next day, about 36 hours, packed with the most amazing series of events I could imagine. Let me explain. I'm referring to three chapters in the book that my fellow disciple and friend Matthew wrote, starting at chapter 14. Let me give you the backstory here. Herod Antipas had put John the Baptist in prison. And during an unfortunate birthday celebration, he made a rash promise to his daughter, which resulted in him murdering John the Baptist. When the news got around up to Capernaum, news travels quickly around the lake, you know. Jesus was quite struck by this news that the one to announce his coming and preparation had been killed. So his plan was to go off to Bethsaida, off to the east, because he knew a desolate place there, and spend some time by himself and with us, his disciples. So he had us get in the boat, and off we went to Bethsaida. It turns out that people on shore saw us going, and they went as quickly as they could, and they followed the boat, and when we got out at Bethsaida, we expected to have a private time with Jesus. That wasn't to be. A great crowd had gathered, and while we stayed in Bethsaida, more and more people came there, and they needed to be healed. And Jesus immediately responded to them. It's like he took his plans and just threw them away and paid attention to the people. And he really cared for them and he healed them. Now, he had sent us disciples out before this on a healing mission, and we saw some people healed, but this went on for hours. And it got to be later in the day. And so at some point, we said, look, Jesus, it's getting dark now. It's going to be dark pretty soon. Send these people away to get some food. And Jesus said, what do you mean? You give them some food. We didn't know quite what he meant. Well, you give them some food. And so we started looking around, and my brother, Andrew, found a little boy who had a small lunch, 5 pieces of bread, 5 biscuits, and 2 pieces of fish. So Jesus said, okay, have everybody sit down. Now, by this time, there was thousands of people there. We counted 5,000 men, huge crowd. So Jesus said a blessing on this little lunch, and he started to break this up and give pieces to us disciples. And it was kind of confusing, so we didn't notice exactly what was happening. But so we spread ourselves out among the crowd. You can do the math, 12 disciples, 5,000 men, and plus women and children. It was a busy scene. And so we broke a little piece off of what we had. And later we realized, as we broke it off, there was more. We just kept doing this, and all of us disciples did it. And before we knew it, everybody had something to eat, and they were eating, and it kept going. And when we collected the leftovers, we had much more than we started with. That was absolutely surprising. So, as I said, it was getting late in the day, and now it was late in the day. So Jesus said to the people, all right, we've got to stop now. You ought to go home. And he said to us disciples, okay, you get in the boat and go back toward Capernaum. Go back west toward Capernaum. It wasn't that far. Excuse me. Jesus said, I'm going to go up in the mountain here and just have some quiet time with my Father. So we got in the boat, the people all left. And we hadn't gone very far, but a terrible wind came up. It wasn't rain, but it was a big wind. So we started rowing as we were doing, and we had a most difficult time. And in fact, this kept on. The wind kept up. I'd hardly seen such a violent wind. And this was going on for at least 3 or 4 hours, and we were getting hardly anywhere. We got a few miles out, but we were not near the shore. All of a sudden, what do we see but something that looks like a person walking on the water? And he's coming right toward us. And you can believe we were shocked to death to see this. It's a ghost, we said. What's going on here? And all of a sudden comes this voice. Take heart, it's me. Don't be afraid. Well, I was afraid, all right. And I'm not sure why, but I said, I didn't think it was Jesus, but I said, okay, Jesus, if it's you, let me know. Tell me to come. And all of a sudden I heard this voice, come on, Peter. What am I going to do? I don't think I was thinking rational, but I got over the edge. And there I could walk on the water. The wind was blowing like crazy. The waves were high. I could walk on the water. And I was shocked to death. And there was this person, Jesus. I was getting closer to him. I lost heart. I gave up, kind of. And I was close to him. He reached over. He said, hold on, Peter. Hold on. I got you. Then when he had firm hold of me, he said, look, what are you doubting? What do you mean, what am I doubting? but he held on, and we made it into the boat. And you know, as soon as we got inside the boat again, the wind stopped. It was the most shocking thing. We'd hardly seen a wind this heavy, but it stopped as soon as we got in the boat. And all we could say was, you, Jesus, are the Son of God. You're the Son of God. What that was, I'd never had anything like this. It wasn't long we got to where we were going, which was actually not Capernaum, but Gennesaret, beyond Capernaum, a few miles. So by this time, I should have said it was about 4 o'clock in the morning when we saw Jesus walking. So it was dark, except there was some moonlight. So we got to Gennesaret fairly early in the morning, but wouldn't you know it, when we got there, there were some people who had followed the boat somehow and got word that we were there. And once they knew we were there, the word spread quickly, and people from other villages and places came around. Again, sick people. I don't blame them. There wasn't much help from doctors back then, and Jesus certainly could help people. He did help people. Now look, in Matthew's story, book, chapter 14, he made a point to say, they brought to Jesus all who were sick and implored him that they might only touch the fringe of his garment, and as many as touched it were made well. So Matthew was very, very deliberate here. Everybody who was sick, got there. And all they had to do was touch the bottom of his robe, his clothing. And all of them who did were healed. It was just like when Moses put up the snake in the wilderness, everybody who looked at the snake was healed, every last one. So, but that was a long day. We didn't sleep a wink during the night. And by the time this day was over, all the people had been healed. You can believe I was dead tired, but it took a while to settle down, trying to process all the things that had happened that day. Jesus certainly surprised us, all of us, that day. He was so quick to put aside his own plans and his own tiredness, and to give the people who had walked a long way to see him the help he could give. He healed them. And God gave me the chance to walk on that windy water with Jesus. I can never forget this day, centuries ago. But I knew for sure that day I saw how compassionate Jesus was to people and to me, and how powerful he was. It was like nothing could stop him. So the second day I wanted to tell you about this morning happened shortly after this. We took a trip up to Tyre and Sidon, and that's where we met this woman from the Canaanite woman who had a daughter who had a demon, and Jesus healed her. And then now I'm going to tell the story from chapter 15. Jesus had us go up to a city called Caesarea Philippi, about 25 miles north of the Sea of Galilee. This was the capital of Herod Philip, who was the son of Herod the Great, the one the wise men talked with. And Herod Philip, named after Caesar, Julius Caesar, this city was kind of his capital. And he's part of the John the Baptist story because his wife, Philip's wife, ended up in Herod's bedroom, and that was a sad story there, and that led to John the Baptist's death. Anyway, here we are in Caesarea Philippi with Jesus. This is chapter 13, verse 16. And Jesus had some questions for us. 16. What are people saying? What have you heard people say about the Son of Man? Who is he? Well, we said, well, we heard Jesus, that some people have called him Elijah, returned from the dead somehow, or Jeremiah, or some other prophet. Then Jesus said, well, what about you guys? What do you say? Who do you say I am? And right away, it was like God told me. I said, you, Jesus, are the Christ. You're the Messiah. You're the Son of the living God. And Jesus immediately said, God bless you, Simon Peter. Nobody taught you that. My Father in heaven let you know about this secret. Well, that was kind of surprising that I had said that, and then Jesus responded right away. But then Jesus started to say some things that were extremely unsettling, like, I have to go to Jerusalem, and I have to suffer many things from the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, and they're going to kill me, and I'm going to rise from the dead. And I was shocked. I couldn't believe Jesus talking this way after what I had seen. He was so compassionate and so powerful, nothing could stop him. Not sicknesses, not a windstorm, not even walking on the water. And so I blurted out, that's impossible, Jesus. That can never be. How could you let yourself undergo such suffering? Well, he let me have it then. Peter, get out of my way, he said. Satan, get lost. You have no idea how God works. No idea at all. Well, we 12 disciples had been with Jesus quite a while by this point. As I said, he had sent us out himself on healing missions, and we saw people healed. And I had left my business fishing with my father and with Zebedee, the father of James and John. And we've been with Jesus all this time, but he was talking like we didn't know anything. He said, anybody who comes to me has to let me lead. I will be in charge of their life. You're not in the driver's seat anymore. I am. Don't run from suffering. Embrace it. Follow me, and I'll show you how. Self-help, that's no help at all. Self-sacrifice, that's the way. My way to finding yourself, your true self. What kind of a deal is it if you get everything you want, but you lose yourself? What could you ever trade your soul for to get it back? It took a while for Jesus' words to sink in, I admit. But I did, eventually. I realized that because I had seen how powerful and loving and compassionate Jesus was, I really could turn over control of my life to him every day and always. Later, shortly before Jesus came back to heaven, he hinted that I was going to die by crucifixion. The Romans Romans seemed to especially love this way of executing a person, and they did it hundreds of times, maybe thousands. Nothing was more degrading. To have your clothes stripped off, beaten up, and nailed to the cross. But somehow I was able to handle that news okay. If that was God's plan for me, I would accept it and count on Jesus' help to get me through it. Later, in Jerusalem, this Herod had killed James, another old fishing partner of mine and fellow disciple, and he planned to do the same thing to me. He had me in prison. The next day, he was planning to do that. But I could relax and sleep. I knew that Jesus' compassionate power was going to help me face whatever it might be. Though I certainly never expected to have an angel wake me up the next morning or during the night. So that's my story of those two remarkable days with Jesus. That long day when I saw his compassion and power, and then the day shortly after when we started to learn really about suffering and about accepting suffering. It changed my life. Now I know that you have not experienced the things I did on that first day around and on Lake Galilee, the Sea of Galilee. But I'm quite sure each of you has seen Jesus at work in your life in ways that are clear. Maybe it was when you met a person or people who told you about Jesus and what it was to trust him. And they seemed to have just the words you needed to hear. Or maybe you have a memory of a time Jesus helped you and answered a specific prayer, maybe financially or maybe physically. Those aren't just accidents, you know. So I say, you all, let Jesus lead you and let the Holy Spirit teach you every day, every minute. As your shepherd, as the head of your church, he really is alive and really cares about you all. As I found out, he can do the most surprising things. But don't forget what he taught me and all of us disciples, us 12 disciples, about accepting suffering. Also, please remember what I said in my first letter to Jesus' followers scattered all over the place. This is what I wrote. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. According to his great mercy, he caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. To an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading, kept in heaven for you, who by God's power are being guarded through faith, guarded every moment, for a salvation ready to be revealed in the last time. That is, this is what Jesus said actually on that second day. He talked about suffering, and then he said, the Son of Man is going to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay each person according to what he has done. Somehow Jesus is keeping track of everything all of his followers have ever done. And when they are done in his name and his authority and his power, he will repay you. It's incredible, but that's the promise. And then I wrote back in my letter, in this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Don't forget, Jesus is coming back just as he said to us during that second day. And just as the angel said to us outside of Jerusalem, as we saw him go back to heaven, he's coming back. Jesus notices everything, especially when you obey and trust him, no matter how hard the suffering. Well, it's nice, been nice talking with you this morning. Thank you for listening. Till we meet again.